You have a situation, we've all heard it over and over again, in terms of individuals whose home environments might well not be conducive to education, in terms of you might have a lot of profanity being echoed in the background that filters into the class. You might have a whole range of issues that exist in the home, because the school is now going into the home and observing and having to take in all of these social problems that might exist in our society. And that is the next thing. But equally, I would say to you, Peter, that at the same time, you might have children who live in more comfortable living arrangements and might have their own bedroom, for example, and they're set up in their bedroom. And the same thing will sign on to the thing and decide to go and lie down upon their bed and watch a film or use their other device, because they have two or three devices. It isn't an issue of only saying that we have this social problem with a certain type of student, but it is a problem. These problems or problems of inattention is spanning the whole gauntlet. You know, in Sierra Leone, when they had Ebola, I remember reading some years ago when they had the crisis, that the UNDP, they did a study over there. And the aftermath of Ebola, teenage pregnancy there rose by 65%. And it was for a number of reasons, one of which was parental absence, children, schools being closed, children at home. I would not venture to say that there has been an increase in teenage pregnancy in Barbados. I don't know that. But what I will say is that it certainly does open us up where you have children who might be at home because their parents have no choice but to go back out to work physically. Then it creates a whole set of problems for us. And that really tells us that we have had to use this on this online environment, but it is not optimal at all. And so when the opportunity arises for us to return, then that clearly is the no-brainer, as the Americans would say, because you have a situation where in the last month the COVID cases have been on a pretty steady track downwards, and the entire country must help in that regard in terms of ensuring that it remains on a downward trajectory. Deaths have slowed down somewhat. About 22% of the population have gotten their vaccination. Teachers, as you would have referenced a few moments ago with Patrick, teachers have a significant number have been vaccinated, and a significant number will continue to be vaccinated. And as well, too, there are some people who would wish to say that teachers do not wish, some teachers don't wish to return until they've had both doses of the vaccine, and then 2 weeks after that to build further immunity. And I can understand people being, you know, I'm afraid for their own safety. It is a very dangerous time that we live in, no doubt about it. But when the government is following the science and they look at the latest data that you see, and they see that after your first jab of the AstraZeneca, the late stage trial data says to you that you are about 76% protected against COVID with these symptoms. And as a matter of fact, just last or this week actually, out of England, the University College of London, they produced a study which showed that in nursing homes where they have the most virulent strain or the most transmissible strain of variant of COVID, those elderly people have the first dose has stopped 62% of infections and made the people less infectious overall. So that clearly the first jab has been effective, and it provides you with a significant layer of protection. So in this COVID problem first emerged in October 2019, long before we even knew about it. We wouldn't hear about it until January of last year. But the fact is that in October, we could have closed ourselves off from the world. Everybody could have stayed at home, and we could have done that for a period indefinitely. And perhaps we wouldn't have COVID at all, and nobody would have contracted COVID, and nobody might have died of COVID. But that would not be a sustainable situation. So we have to balance, as the Prime Minister always says, you have to balance the risk. You have to balance the risk of COVID transmission and equally balance the risk of the real issues that we are risking here in terms of the lack of education, the social problems that we are exposing ourselves to with children at home. And it isn't about the government being reckless at all, because they aren't saying that next month all children will be back into school. But it is going to be done in a very phased way. It is going to be done in terms of priority for certain students who have to sit external examinations, for example. And you know the issues that have happened in external examinations. So the government would be loath, really, to further disadvantage children who were disadvantaged, in my opinion. And, well, not even in my opinion, but as appears to be the fact, who were disadvantaged in the last year. And so it falls to the entire country, to me, Peter, to continue to allow us to keep up this good trajectory in terms of our COVID numbers. And when that happens, then you have safe schools. Because ultimately...
Get children back in the school.
Ultimately, we haven't seen a lot of COVID transmission in workplaces. You've seen it in communities or homes or whatever, but because in workplaces and in schools, there is rigid adherence, or if you want to call it that, to mask wearing, to hand sanitizing, to distancing, so then it lessens considerably the spread of COVID, while at the same time allowing us to go back to school. So really and truly, Peter, I am satisfied that the minister, her team, and ultimately the cabinet, they did their due diligence. I am confident that they will adapt if the situation changes, as they have continued to do. And so really and truly, I can't say to you anything more than the fact that I am confident that this decision is in the best interest of all stakeholders, and it is going to secure the holistic well-being of all of those stakeholders. I have full confidence based on the available data at this time in this particular decision.
Khalil, thanks for calling and for making that very strong point, which I support entirely regarding the importance of people getting back into schools. I do not think that people understand the kind of losses that we are making, the kind of challenges that we are creating for ourselves by keeping the schools closed as long as this. I just want to ask you, though, while you're there, regarding your views on CXC exams this year, 11 plus exams this year. As a student leader in your own right, and I appreciate that it's not going to be your decision to make, but do you think it is wise for us to proceed with CXC examinations this year, not only in the way that they're proposing, but the fact that we should just continue and do it as though nothing happened? Do you think that it puts students at a disadvantage?
I have made it quite clear that I think that treating this situation as business as usual really is not wise. And to that extent, to believe that having lost so much time that we can do this examination and we can have the same number of papers and such, like, really is not, in my view, a sensible option. And they might wish to suggest to you that students can defer in terms of that they can decide to take the exam next year. And yes, that might be viewed by some as a merciful option. But the fact of the matter is that that then sets back a child's educational journey for another year. So that they have lost last year, they've lost this year, and they're not going to lose the next year. Additionally, when a child chooses to defer, who is going to teach them for that year? Because the child will no longer, for example, if they're in the sixth form and they're upper six, the child will no longer be in the school because they would be past the age and gone. So who's going to teach them to be able for them to be able to maximize that additional year? So the plans are not on solid ground, in my view. But we will certainly they have decided to release the broad topic areas for the long paper, and that might go some way in helping a lot of our students to prepare. But beyond that, I think that I will make the point again that CXC needs to be two C's, a lot more contrite in terms of the disaster that occurred last year, and they have not been sufficiently contrite in that regard. And they also need to be more consultative. And students are important stakeholders in education. Our own minister here, Minister Santia Bradshaw, believes in consultation and consults widely with students also. And I would wish then to see that bleed through to the regional institution that CXC is, because consultation is important. And I make the point a lot of the time that we want a lot of children to be civic-minded and what's not at the age of 18. But it doesn't turn on like a switch at that age. We must bring a lot of our students along the conversation for us to be able to really hone those skills of collaborating with people and consulting and that kind of thing, Because, as I said, it's not a switch that you can turn on at 18. And we need to start the process a lot earlier. And that is something that the government of Barbados believes in. And I would hope that that can be passed on, certainly, to other institutions such as CXC.
Okay. All right, Khalil, thank you again for calling and for sharing. And I appreciate your perspective as a young person on this issue. Do we have to go to a break? No, we don't. Okay. I have a WhatsApp from Juanita Lynch. And Juanita is saying to me that virtual is not the same. I don't go to Parliament myself, but I can't wait to put on clothes and sit in the stands at Kensington Oval. Even though I have Netflix at home, I can't wait to go to a cinema again. I can't wait to have a family gathering with 30 or 40 people from 3 or 4 countries again. Virtual is just not the same. Human beings enjoy multiple stimuli, sight, sound, taste, smell, and touch. All these things enrich the human experience, and they miss the good old pre-COVID days. Juanita, I am with you on that. I am sick of net meetings and Zoom or whatnot. I came to a point where I was sick of traveling on mission, and now I would give anything to go on mission somewhere because I'm sick of not being able to meet people face to face. The reality, however, is that Parliament is somewhat different. People don't clamor to go to the courts and listen to cases, and they don't clamor to go to Parliament to hear Parliament because, generally speaking, there are better ways to enjoy it, and you can't compare Parliament. You know, and I respect you, with a game at Kensington Oval. When I see a Kensington Oval and they see a 6 or 4, I can holler out and I can wave my panel and I could drink a beverage while I'm doing it. I cannot do those things in Parliament. And I think for many of us, we find it is in a natural environment. And that's the reason why nobody goes in Barbados now. And it's not because there's no elevator. People don't go because they find it boring and there are easier, better ways to enjoy it virtually. And the same can be said with parliaments in Canada and the United Kingdom and here in France. I mean, nobody ain't going in there to listen to them in Parliament. You watch it on television like everybody else. So if somebody wants to do it, I think that's fine. You know, put on your clothes and go. But the vast majority of people are interested in that. So down to brass tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
I am trying to do, and how are you doing?
Man, I'm doing. I ain't trying to do. I'm doing. And I'm doing well, hopefully.
Yeah, I'm doing well, too. But I do believe that we are still under COVID-19 lockdown, as per se, between 9 and 5 in the morning. But unfortunately, I was at work. Well, still at work. My mom would have called me earlier this morning, asked if I'm standing or sitting. So I said, well, I know, with these sentiments, you know, you like to hear some sort of bad news or somebody passed away or something. Mm-hmm. But she said, there's a guy that we have some animals at home, some sheep, pig, whatever. And she said, well, the guy that looks after the stocks has come out and said, where are the sheep? He said, how many are the sheep? He said, well, but the door's still locked, but the sheep gone. She had me sheep gone. Somebody, apparently, between whatever time this morning or last night this morning, went in the pen and carried 4 sheep out the pen. Sometime last week, another guy down in this is in Rockhall, St. Thomas, he lose 4 also. You know, so I don't know if the person's working between COVID, the COVID times to do these things. Because me surprised the pen is still on, but the sheep gone.
The matter has been reported to the police?
Yes, I have been reported to the police. She has reported.
It has been reported, okay. Okay. And the investigation has, you don't know how far the investigation has gotten?
No, because I am not at home, and I don't think they came yet, because I don't know what they will find. Because, you know, it is, I know, that's her, like, the hood. There's a woman that's 84 years old, and that's her, like, the hood. She look after these things, like her children.
Mm. Yeah. You don't have any cameras out there where the
no,
areas are?
No, there are no cameras in that area.
Yeah. That may be something that you may want to think about, because they are probably a probably most effective tool in stopping all kinds of larceny, pretty ill and other ways.
Mm-hmm.
So. All right.
Oh, okay.
Okay, sir. All right. Thank you for raising that concern. And I hope that the police are able to make some success or breakthroughs regarding the investigation. You know, stealing of people's livestock is not something that we want to encourage. Down to brass tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Good morning, sir. I'm good. And yourself?
I'm good, man. Yeah, I really called to talk about Frank Bachman, but I heard one thing where since it was I'd be on for over an hour, because I wanted to talk about Frank Bachman so badly, I decided to stay on.
But do Blackie first, and then after.
Do Blackie, but I'm glad to hear Esther Miller came in there and give a lot of information that a lot of us didn't know about, even though we knew Blackie for years. I knew him since 1970, personally, because he used to train the students at the Cooperative High School. And one of those persons would have been Marcia Trotman. And then we had other guys who would have done well at the Carista Games, representing Barbados. And we had Marcia was, as you remember, Marcia Trotman being, she went to Olympics. She ran the 200. Remember that?
That's Marcia Trotman,
He was one of the people who trained her. And he used to train the students from the Cooperative High School. And what I knew about him was that he was very efficient. He always had a stern look, but he wasn't ill-mannered or anything like that. He was just firm. And even though at that time he would not have been an old person, he would have been in his late 20s, early 30s, I believe. But he was a good influence on the students, and he caused them to be serious about what they're doing. So he's somebody who will lose. But I was thinking that somebody needs to give us that publicly that information that Esther gave us this morning. I mean, I myself didn't know some of it. And, you know, over time we've had people like Austin Seeley being featured in books. We've had the same Esther. We've had your girl, Esther Maynard. Not Esther Maynard. The other one that you got, that was...
Kathy Harper Hall.
Kathy Harper Hall, yeah. Yeah, she's our girl. She came here, but she got quite involved with Alexandra. I think she was at Allen School first, and then she went to Alexandra. And these were all people who contributed. But I know that they are in books already. But I think the story of Blackman needs to be documented. He was a very selfless man. As they say, I've never heard him talking anything about himself. I've never heard him talk anything that was negative. He was a very positive influence on the students, very positive human being, and a father figure around the school. So he will be missed. No matter how old you get, he will miss you for your contribution. I think you want, when you talk about Dover, I think Mr. Cox, he passed away in recent times. You remember Mr. Cox? Came from Chancery Lane, but he worked at the Sports Council.
He was the Dover man as opposed to Blackie.
He was the Dover man. Right. So he took over from Blackie.
All right. Let's stand corrected.
He also trained some of the students at Cooperative High School too. After Blackie wasn't doing it, he was doing it from the Sports Council side. Actually, he was one of my father's, I would say, buddy mates. They were both on the Athletic Association together as council members. And he came from, you used to live in Chancery Lane too. He was also another good one that I think should be documented for their contribution to sports in Barbados. But I don't know who's doing these things. They may put a story in the newspaper, but I think these things need to be documented for the library, for the archives, for the university, for the community college. And so But I've done some of it. Actually, in my works, I've featured a lot of these people. But I was saying, David, how come I left with Black? But the books I wrote were like memorable community leaders. Then I did one on civic leaders. And I also had one on modern icons of Barbados, which featured over Derek Thompson. But there are so many things on my plate now. But I have to influence somebody to do something on Blackie. They could do on a number of people who have made contributions in sports. They may not have been leaders, but they were very influential. And Blackie cannot be forgotten. That's what I said.
Wendell, one of the problems that I think has to be overcome is that we have a perception of athletics that it is a second-rate enterprise. And I think that is a big part of the reason why you don't find people writing books about athletic coaches and so on. And, you know, one of the things which I was making the point to Esther Maynard just now, that I think that people like Blackie have brought a level of respectability to the sporting enterprise. To the point now where we have a cricket program on VOB, and we have programs that are dedicated to sport in a serious way. So I do believe that in years to come, that stuff will be written about, that people like him will be immortalized in print. And I can't think it is not too soon, you know, it can't happen soon enough. It's just that sadly, over the years, we never accorded the level of respect that we would accord to a lecture in history, a teacher in history, like Alden Adams. that we would to black men, when the reality is that the person that we are today, yes, Orlin Adams would have been an important person. Hazel Linda would have been important, but certainly Blackie was also important to the kind of individual level, that we came up to be.
At that level, he played a key role because the students could talk to him and he was there as a father figure.
Of course, yeah.
Not just as a coach. Yeah. He was one of the amazing characters of our time around, around schools and around sports. I just want to talk to you about Parliament, the point that Mark was making. I must say that people used to come turn out to Parliament on special occasions. But Parliament was not a place where a lot of people went. You know, that were on the upper deck, that was for guests. If you were involved in the action, you were on the lower one, but you still had to climb upstairs, right? So the thing about having steps, I mean, on stairs, not stairs, elevators or escalators, that's relevant for, especially for the disabled and so on. But I think Mark got a fierce reality. Mark, we're in a modern age, right? And if you could sit down home and watch this thing on your phone, because you're watching it on your phone, no, you know, I watch Parliament on my phone. So I don't have the urge to go down there. You know, you watch all kinds of things on your phone. You can watch it on your laptop. Now I think it's coming on TV as well. So a lot of people just to go downtown. I don't even watch TV, I watch it on my phone. So you're not going to dress and go downtown. You're spending time, you're in traffic. You got to dress that there. So those who want to go can go, but very few used to go normally, right? But I think the fact that it is not available even on your phone makes it easily accessible to people. And I think what we have to do is to encourage them to watch it by using the modern technology so that they can learn and they can watch it. And if they want to laugh, for example, I guess the other day they would have had a lot to laugh about. If they want to laugh lying in their bed or in their front room with their friends, they can laugh and not disturb anybody, but you can't go in Parliament and laugh.
You can't go in Parliament and laugh.
They put you out. It's against the rules. Right? So I agree with you 1,000% on that one. But the other things I heard, but those are the two things that I want to be in a good mood today. I don't want to do anything too political.
All right. Well, I like today's call, and I thank you for making that reflection. I hope that somebody picks you up on the idea of writing about. Thanks so much for calling, Wendell. Good to hear from you. And also thanks for supporting my point on the Parliament thing. Okay, it's now 11:48, and we go, of course, until noon, and then we break for the regional roundup. You can call us on 434-1790, or you can WhatsApp me on 266-IVOB. Good morning and welcome. Well, we take a break, and we come back, and we continue with Down to Brass Tacks.